president is not saying anything. So if the president is not saying anything, which means I must seek assistance from other people from outside the country. But what I'm saying is justice must be served in this instance. We can't live in a country where I, as a whistleblower, must be in hiding while the people I implicated are still in the position of power, still misusing the state resources to come after me, to prosecute me.
Hello, everybody. This is Solly Mueng. Welcome again to another session of Worldview. This is the place where we explore everyone's perspective on things that can broaden our own worldview, get us better to understand the world we live in, the events, the people, the motives, who's doing what to whom, and why it's important to the rest of us. And we have had a lot of very interesting conversations about South Africa with South African people from different backgrounds and who have different impacts on the country that we are, the people that we are today. I'm very delighted to host Patricia Mashale. Some of you may have read about her on social media, on other platforms. She's the whistleblower from the SAPS. And she'll tell me if she's happy for me to call her whistleblower. That's what she's called, because she's one of those good, brave South Africans who stood up and said, this is not good for the country. You guys need to stop. Something needs to be done about this. And we know what happens to whistleblowers in South Africa. Patricia, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Solly, and good morning to all your viewers.
Thank you. They're also your viewers. My viewers are your viewers today.
Our viewers.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, people like yourself, and there are many others out there. Many have spoken out, many have not spoken out. Many continue to suffer in silence because they are afraid. Many cannot even get jobs anymore. Their livelihoods have been destroyed because they either spoke out or they refused to sign a document that would have unleashed funds to places where they shouldn't be going. So most people tend to agree that people like yourselves are not sufficiently, not only celebrated, but also protected and supported. Do you feel that way? Do you feel like many times you're on your own?
All the time, Solly. I'm definitely on my own because I've been to different offices. Mm. I've exhausted so many avenues to get some protection or support from the government, but to no avail. So I'm on my own all the time since the beginning of my whistleblowing. Yeah. I've never received any assistance from the government.
So let's assume that people watching us do not know what is going on, what happened. Maybe take a few minutes and tell us your story from the beginning.
Yes, Solly. I was appointed in the South African Police Service on 1 August 2007. Mm. And since the day I started working at the police, I saw that things have been done in a different way. I saw a lot of corruption being done, especially by senior managers. And in 2008, I started to speak out about it. And then 2009, I reported it actually to the relevant authorities within the province. And nothing was done. Nothing was actually done. I was retaliated upon from that time already. I was also charged departmentally. I actually won the departmental case, and I sued the police. I sued the very person which was a brigadier at the time. We called them directors back then. I sued him in his personal capacity, and then I also sued SAPS. And then I decided to write a letter to the former President Zuma, reporting the very same corruption of which I was retaliated upon.
What was the nature of this corruption?
The nature of the corruption was nepotism. You know what nepotism is? The biggest thing happening in SAPS. And then there was abuse of powers, misuse of state resources, and then just general crime that was committed by senior officials, and nothing happened. And then I reported it to the former president, and he ordered an investigation into the matter. And the former ICD, which is now IPED, investigated. And they found the allegations to be true. And it was a report, and they submitted a copy of the final report to me. And the other copies was submitted to the former national commissioner, which was Becky Tele, and the minister who was Natim Tetwa. And the both of them, they just buried that report. I still have the report.
So when you sued the brigadier, the director, did anything come out of it? I mean, that yes. Went into the courts, right? So what was the outcome of it?
No. I actually, the court granted I sued him for 100,000 rand, and the court granted me 50,000 rand. And actually, the sheriff already attached his property recently now. And then I'm now also busy with my lawyer with a lawsuit against SAPS currently. So I just wanted to make this clear, because recently the national commissioner went to parliament actually last week to say there was charges against me, and the case was never finalized, and the case was actually finalized. I did sue SAPS, and I did sue that brigadier who made the allegations against me. So yes, I just wanted to clarify.
Okay. And the report that was buried, so where is it at now? What happened?
I have the report. I've been writing to Becky Taylor since 2010 to implement the recommendations of that report. Because
so basically, that's Becky Taylor 1 and Becky Taylor 2. Then he was commissioner of police. Now he is the minister of police. It's still the same man and still the same pushing back against you.
Everyone, even the current nation commissioner, was part of the people who prosecuted me, who charged me departmentally back then. Fanny Masimola was the divisional commissioner of human resource management. He was part of the people. So actually all the role players back then are still there. They are still there, and they know exactly about what happened back then, and they are still trying to cover up everything.
Whom are they protecting?
You know what? They are protecting themselves, because I also implicated them in the corruption. They are protecting all the people that I implicated, because some of the people that was implicated in the report back then got promoted over the years. Some of them are now generals in the police. And yes, they are seeing that they are also implicated. They are actually also protecting themselves, because if this report are going to be implemented, they are also going to be part of the people who must be charged.
Right. So do you have people currently, you don't have to name them, but people in the SAPS, former colleagues and others who are saying to you, listen, it's true what you're doing. Thank you. We support you. We might not show our face in public, but we want you to know that we support you, and we can give you some information that you need to enhance your case. Now, do you have support, or do you find that everyone is like giving you the hand?
Solly, I have now hundreds and hundreds of members who are supporting me. I have this unlawfully dismissed members. If I can make a calculation, it's all over the country. I can say it's round about almost 3,000 unlawfully dismissed members by SAPS that are now called disgruntled members. These members have been dismissed through a process called expeditious. There's the sub-disciplinary regulation 9.
Expeditious.
Expeditious.
Okay, how does it work?
The regulation itself is not unlawful, But the way the regulation are being implemented is unlawful, because members are not afforded, I've been dismissed through this regulation. You are not being afforded an opportunity to defend yourself in that trial. You are not being afforded the opportunity to call witnesses. All they do is just inform you that this is the charges against you, and you are now dismissed.
And are you saying that's lawful?
That's unlawful. That's unlawful. Even according to the regulation itself, right. It's unlawful in terms of the Labor Relations Act. That's unlawful, because everyone must be afforded an opportunity to defend himself in the court of law or in a departmental trial.
Of course, there's a simple legal principle of audi parterem partem, which is here the other side.
Exactly. That doesn't happen in SAPS. You are just being informed that now you are dismissed.
So when were you dismissed? What year was it?
I was dismissed actually I went to a departmental trial in January.
This year?
This year. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know I was dismissed. And then, the departmental trial was actually in February, 22nd February.
Right.
I worked all along for that month. Mm-hmm. And then the end of March, or February, I just saw that my salary was not paid into my account. I went to do some inquiries, and I was informed that I was already dismissed on the 22nd of February, without getting salary, without getting benefit, without doing nothing.
But it's amazing. I mean, I've seen at least from some of your papers as well, and throughout the civil service, people get dismissed. Some of them even die, and they continue receiving salaries for years and for years and years. So somebody in HR was pressured to ensure that the very next month after they are supposedly dismissed, you don't even get a salary. It's just ready to frustrate you, right?
Yes, it was actually to frustrate me. And the funny thing is, when I went to check my status on the system, the status still showed that I'm still receiving actually a salary. I'm still active. And even now, recently, I think it's about a month ago, I called the Workers' Life, that is our funeral cover and the pop room, and they told me, no, your premiums are still up to date, meaning that you are still receiving a salary, but wherever the salary is going, definitely not in my bank account. And the other thing that happens solely is on the 1st of November, I received, it was 21 minutes past 7 in the morning, I received an SMS from GPF informing me that
was GPA?
GPF is the government employee pension.
Oh yeah, okay, correct. Yes.
I received the SMS confirming that my application for withdrawal of my pension. I was shocked because I never applied for the withdrawal of my pension.
Right.
And I was suspicious with the time that I received.
Was it a notification, or was it something that required you to sign to approve?
It was a notification that my application has been captured.
Right. So somebody signed your documents on your behalf?
Yes, 21 minutes past 7 in the morning. It's outside GPF office hours.
Right.
I called them later, and I asked them, and the lady said, no, we actually received your application today, and it was captured today. I laughed because I know what is happening in GPF.
Yeah, this is crazy. I mean, so obviously there are officials. I mean, you have all these other people who support you, but you also have officials who are doing what they are being told to do, even when they know it's not right.
Even if they know it's not right, they are. You know what? In SAPS, they have this saying: comply and complain later. You comply, then you complain later. Meaning that you do, and you are instructed to do unlawful things, and you will come afterwards and comply, but the instruction that you were given. But also, I blame the officers, because you get lawful instructions and you get unlawful instructions.
Correct.
And you can contest an unlawful instruction, and no one can charge you for refusing to comply to an unlawful.
Why do people do that? Why do you think people easily comply to unlawful instructions?
Victimization. Victimization, because the moment you don't comply to an instruction, is there where you will probably get dismissed. You will get charged and you will get dismissed.
But isn't it PROPCO? Doesn't the police union protect people like yourselves? I mean, what's their role? Are they too politicized? Are they too aligned to the ANC?
They are too politicized. They are too aligned to the ANC. Remember, even that the police are politicized. You know what, in the South African Police Service Act, there's a clear clause that say no police officer should be aligned to any political party, but the police themselves are aligned to political
because many of them are deployed there. They think that they owe their allegiance to the political party, not to the people of South Africa. Maybe that's a big problem. Constitution.
Yes, they get instructions from politicians to do whatever, so they are not working for the South African community. They are working for politicians.
So let's go back. You got a message or an invitation by now, Minister Bekele, to meet you somewhere, but he wanted you to come on your own. What was all that about?
What happened there, the previous day I was interviewed by Power FM, mm-hmm. and I exposed all this corruption happening, especially in crime intelligence also. Mm-hmm. And I also exposed that report that implicated Becky Taylor, the report that was never implemented, mm-hmm. the recommendations.
Right.
And then the very next day, it was around 8 o'clock in the morning. I still have the record, record.
When the call came in, did you know it was him? Was it a message?
It was him because I have his number.
Okay.
It was not the first time that I was communicating with Becky Taylor. I reported a lot of things to Becky Taylor before. Mm-hmm. Remember, as I said, since 2010.
Right. Correct.
I even have emails from Becky Taylor whereby you are supposed to meet with me in 2010 regarding the implementation of that report, whereby he never honored that meeting. So I had his number on my phone.
Okay.
I used to report different things to Becky Taylor, including the illegal smuggling of firearms in Free State. And so
smuggling. Okay, we'll talk about that. So yes. You saw the number and it came.
So I saw it was him. I was actually shocked. And then he told me that he was on his way to Cape Town to Parliament. It was on a Monday morning.
Right.
He was on his way to Cape Town to Parliament. So if he's going to be back the Wednesday. So he wants to arrange me to meet with him on the Thursday in Gauteng. But the condition was we meet alone. He will arrange all the logistics, accommodation, everything. I told him, you know what? I'm not alone in this. I'm representing this unlawful dismissed members. So if we meet, we meet with all these members. You cannot meet with me alone. And then he say, no, I will get back to you on that. And so he never got back to me on that.
No, this
he
is
never active. Got back to me, meaning that you wanted me alone. I didn't want other people to be part of this. So I don't know what was the motive behind this. Everyone can just make up his own mind about it.
So in the past, you wrote to then President Zuma, the man from Kandla. Mm-hmm. Now we have the new president from Phalaphala, or maybe amongst other places. Have you written to him?
I have written to him on several occasions. Mm-hmm. I have responses from his PA, Robert Longani, whereby he even reprimanded me because I misspelled his surname. His responses to my email was to refer me back to Becky Taylor. I responded back to him and said, you have my complaint. You have everything. I implicated Becky Taylor. How do you refer me back to Becky Taylor? Yeah. I even asked him, do you actually forward my communication to the president? Because now I see that everything, the buck is stopping here with you. Mm-hmm. So I think.
So who is this? Sorry, is it somebody in the president's office?
somebody, Robert Hlongani, the president's office. Right. And then he never responded to me again after that. Never responded to me.
I don't know. Okay, let's go back. Let's put it all on the table. So tell us about the smuggling of weapons. Is it, because there's a whole thing apparently in South Africa that has been going on with some police issued rifles or pistols or guns being found in the hands of gangsters, especially in the Cape Fairs. So is it police enabling, you know, the passage through police cars of guns from elsewhere into the communities in South Africa, or are these police issued weapons that end up in the public?
Yes. What I discovered in 2018, you know what, I worked on the firearm system. I could check the origin of firearms.
Right.
And you know what actually happened that time around? There was a truck that fell down, that overturned near Edinburgh in Free State. Mm-hmm. And that truck was transporting firearms. So, they got a list, a transport permit.
And from where permit, to where?
It was from Gauteng on its way to Cape Town.
On behalf of the police? So it was a...
No. Oh. It was not on behalf of the police. It was a private person. And my commander was, because the works could not check the firearms on the system, they didn't have the functions. Mm-hmm. Coincidentally, Becky Kele was in Free State that day, and he also visited that scene. So my commander was called to the scene to go and get the serial numbers of the firearms.
How many firearms, Morena?
You know what? It was around, if I can just remember, it was around 50 firearms with a lot of ammunition.
Yeah.
So, because the people on the scene, the Hawks, didn't know how to handle the scenes regarding the firearms, my commander was called to the scene. And then the first thing when he arrived at the scene, he requested for a transport permit, because there must be a transport permit issued in Pretoria.
Right.
And then he emailed this transport permit to me so that I can check the firearms on the system. So I checked the firearms on the system and I found all those firearms were not on a record.
Wow.
So the first question...
Were they brand new firearms?
Not brand new firearms.
So some of them used.
They did have serial numbers though, right. But right. you couldn't find any records on the serial numbers. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that came to my mind, the first question I asked is, how was a transport permit issued for firearms that are not registered on the system? And then when my commander came to the office, we sent the list to someone working with the transport permits in Pretoria to double check for us. Mm-hmm. And he confirmed to say this transport permit was not issued by me, because he is the one who issued the transport permits. So he confirmed.
Did they have like a forged signature on it?
Yes, yes. And then my commander told me, say, you know what, there's already a problem with this firearm smuggling. Can you go into the system, go check the firearms that is already in the storage facility, mm-hmm. go check on those firearm serial numbers so that we can check the origin of those firearms.
Right.
And that's when I came across the records of a warrant officer that was working at the firearm storage, was actually removing the firearms from the storage and selling it back to the dealers and to the black market. And the funny thing that I found is these firearms were sent back. They were licensed. They were licensed by people in Pretoria, but these firearms were forfeited to the state. These firearms belonging to the state, but those persons had licenses for these firearms. So I had a box full of documents that I printed, and it was lots and lots and lots of firearms.
Mm-hmm.
My commander went to report it to his line manager to say, this is what is happening. Now we have this thing of now the firearms are being removed and sold there. Nothing was done. It was back in 2018. They didn't do anything about it. And then after a few months, I told my commander, I said, you know what? I'm not going to leave it like that. I'm going to call the national commissioner and report it to the national commissioner. The national commissioner was General Sithole back then. Mm-hmm. I called him and he referred me to Major General Moodley, who was the head of DPCI in the province. So right. I went to Major General Moodley, reported it to him, mm-hmm. and he established a task team. And he also made a request to the provincial commissioner for me to go and assist them through a service arrangement, because they totally didn't have anyone. They didn't have someone who have the functions to check the firearms.
Right.
That request was denied by the provincial commissioner. It's simply denied. So I got suspicious.
So no reason was given.
No reason at all was given. Right. That also made me suspicious to say, you know what, it seems like this is actually a syndicate.
It's going higher.
Because if you're the provincial commissioner and you get this information to say firearms are being smuggled in your province, you will do everything in your power to make sure that this you get behind this. Yes.
Yeah.
And she simply refused that request. And then I remember General Moodley asked me to say, you know what, can you please assist us from your office? And I say that can't be done because in my office, I have my own work to do. I cannot do your work in my own work. If the provincial commissioner refused, then it means the investigation can.
So Moodley was also covering his backside, really.
And Moodley was also covering because he still have the request. A letter of request that is sent to the provincial commissioner. He did appoint a task team from Pretoria, but then just after I gave my documents and my statements and everything to the task team, my identity was then compromised.
Wow. How was it identified?
Yes. That was around 2020, just before the lockdown.
My what does it mean?
It means that now everyone knows, the dealers knows, the police officers who are dealing with the firearms knows, everyone knows that I'm the one who gave them the information. I told Moodley, I say, you know what, my life I now being compromised, who are going to protect me in this? So I can't. They even wanted me to go and work at their offices in Pretoria. I told them it's going to be more dangerous because I know that firearms, that side, they are, the problem is.
Where are those firearms, the ones that came from the truck that overturned? Where are they now?
Those firearms were booked in the safe of Edinburgh, but according to the officer that works there, some detectives came and just removed those firearms without signing anything, without booking the firearms out. The firearms have been removed from Edinburgh.
No record. I mean, surely there would be cameras. Whoever took them must be on record somehow, even if they didn't sign any papers.
On the system, they must also record it on the system when they remove the firearms. It must be recorded who removed them for whatever reason. Those firearms were just removed.
So South Africa is really gangster land. I mean, if we can't trust the police who are meant to protect us to keep law and order in South Africa, where do people run to? To ADT? To other private security companies?
You know what? Law enforcement in South Africa is so compromised. You cannot go to DPCI. You cannot go to IPED because all of them are being controlled by one person, and that's Becky Tele. So law enforcement, South Africans are on their own.
Yeah, I have to tell you, this is your interview, but I must tell you just a little anecdote. I was also scammed big time by some foreigners back in 2011. And it's a long story, but it came down that there were two Hawks officers who were involved in that case. And at some point, after a long struggle with them, with trying to get the commercial section in Durbanville that to open a case, I had to get private people to entrap those policemen meeting me somewhere to ask them for money. They were arrested in the end. There was a whole internal case that they tried to torpedo. They brought I was the sole witness. They brought the wrong docket, I think, charge sheet. And then the person who was presiding, who was one of their colleagues, wanted to dismiss the case. But I fought. I went IPET to say they need to reinstate this case. I insisted, they did. Eventually it's a long thing, but I don't want to take your space here. But eventually those two cops were arrested. There was a long drawn out court case during which I was intimidated. My home was broken into. There was no way that anyone could break into that house, but they did. And they didn't take TVs and phones and stuff. They took a file in which I kept all my family papers. So these guys are really bad. When you want to get into, they will get it to you. So anyway, eventually the two officers were given 10 years in prison, one for the foreign guys ran away, they disappeared through thin air. So and then you sit there, you say, do I run to the police? Many South Africans are in that position. What if I go to the police? And I saw you were saying also, if the police have to offer you the protection that you need, how sure will you be that they will really protect you? How sure will you be if your ID can be compromised? How sure will you be, say they put you in some kind of safe house, and then they tell their buddies who want to get it to you, this is where she's staying? Because that stuff does happen.
And that's how whistleblowers are being killed, because they are being protected under the pretext of protection by the very same people who are guilty of these offenses. You know what, Soli, I've been blocked to such a point when I go to police stations to open a case, there is already instruction issues to all police stations to not register my cases on the system. Even the DPP in the Free State don't prosecute my dockets that I opened against the management. But as soon as they open, you know what, they open harassment cases against me, they obtain protection orders against me, and the harassment cases that I've been prosecuted upon is for spreading false allegations against the South African Police Service. I'm standing in court being prosecuted for such cases. And the last time when I went to court, I asked the magistrate to address the court and ask him to say, you know what, let them prosecute me. I have my evidence. I want my evidence to be tested in the court of law, but let me at least get a fair trial. I have a problem with the DPP, the chief prosecutor and his wife. They are the chief prosecutor and the senior prosecutor who are in cahoots with the South African police management. I asked the magistrate to say, can you then at least afford me the opportunity to have a fair trial by replacing the DPP or the prosecution team with another prosecution team? And he granted my request to say, okay, fine, I'm going to dissolve the entire prosecution team and I'm going to request the prosecution team and a magistrate from another province. Now I know at least, Soli, I will now have a fair opportunity to go and test all these allegations, whereby I have evidence. I have all the evidence. Let us go and test my allegations in court and not have a biased prosecution who already made up their minds that they are going to prosecute me and not prosecute my cases that I open against the management.
Is your family safe? I mean, your home, is it protected? Do you have security at home or sufficient alarm systems? I mean, I know they can breach this and they really in a lot of times just serve to delay, as it were. But do you walk the streets having to look over your shoulders all the time?
I have to walk the streets looking all over my shoulders, but I'm so fortunate to have this Warrant Officer Masdorp, who was tasked to do the threat assessment on me. And Masdorp is there for me. Although he was charged departmentally for refusing to do his mandate, his functions as a counterintelligence officer, is protect all citizens of South Africa. Mm. And I'm a certified whistleblower. I was afforded my whistleblower status by the Human Rights Commission. Right. And Masdor, regardless of, he is not complying and complaining like that. He's doing his job. He's there for me. Everywhere I go, he's with me. And they can simply not do it because he actually won the departmental cases against him. Mm-hmm. So they can't simply not do anything against him because he are constantly throwing the Counter Intelligence Act right. in their faces to say, this is my functions, this is my job, and I will do it. If you're going to prosecute me for doing my job, then so be it.
Yeah, and what about your commander? You mentioned the commander who seemed to be supporting you when those guns were found in, you know, from the truck that overturned on the road. Your commander was, from what you told me earlier, seemed to be as frustrated as you were by the lack of support from provincial and national. Where is he now? Is he still supporting you?
You know what? After they found out my commander was standing with him, they actually also planned to charge him departmentally, but he was a few months away from going on retirement. Mm-hmm. And he actually took like 7 months of his kept leave, because if he didn't, he already got the information that they want to charge him departmentally and dismiss it. So he just decided to take 7 months of his kept leave, mm-hmm. and he went on pension in August this year. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's always this contrast between career policemen, people who've been there, who go through the ranks, who understand the service, and who it's almost like they have a calling to come in. You know, there are teachers with a calling, there are policemen, there are diplomats with a calling, that sort of thing. But there are also other people who just get deployed. You don't know, suddenly somebody gets imposed by nation or politically deployed. Is there a tension between those people who are there to serve and those people who just come in for the big positions, big cars, and all the lifestyle, and who don't really care about public interest?
Definitely. Career police officials are not getting promoted in the SAPS. They are being frustrated. They don't progress. You will find that a warrant officer is sitting in that rank for 30 years. Then you find a 21-year-old who are aligned to one of the managers being appointed in the post of a brigadier. So you can just, that person is now the person who are now the manager of these experienced career officials. And then that person are giving instructions to this career police officials. We said with the situation, I'm talking out of experience,
yeah.
of our provincial head of visible policing. Mm-hmm. He was a provincial head of visible policing. She was never a career police official in her life. She was appointed in 2011 as a communication officer, already as a brigadier in the police. Now she comes and she's been appointed as the provincial head of visible policing in the entire province. She doesn't have the basic idea of policing. If I'm talking about basic, she didn't even know what is the process of applying for a firearm license. She didn't even have firearm competency. I mean, she didn't even know what PAJA means. I mean, if you don't even know what PAJA means, then it's a lost cause.
I don't know what PAJA means. What is it? Okay, I'm not trying to become a policeman here, but please tell us and the viewers, what is PAJA?
It's just the Public Administration Justice Act.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
okay.
And that is something that you should know, especially when you are a manager, especially in terms of charging members, especially right. in terms of basic administration of the right. service.
So you have to go through a course, get it and pass, write exams, get a certificate.
Not even go to, no. Not even go through a course because the act is there. All you have to do is just study.
Yeah, but so somebody who wants to be a police officer surely needs to know the act. How do you know that somebody has study the act or not.
Somebody who needs to be a police officer needs to know the Bible of a police officer is the South African Police Service Act. That's your Bible. If you know the South African Police Service Act, then you cannot go wrong in anything. But like I said, in terms of a manager, a senior manager must know the Public Administrative Justice Act because they are mostly the people who are charging members. They are, because if you charge a member, you must know at least when you charge a member, what is the procedures to follow. So if you ask who is PAJA, then you're a lost cause. You don't even know what is the procedure if you don't know that simple thing. So a police officer are being trained at college already. They're supposed to be trained at college already, the South African Police Service Act. You will not be able to memorize the entire act, but you must at least know the basics of that act. And as a police officer, you must go through that act every day because you are every day the civil actions against the police is because members doesn't even know the basics of the South African Police Service.
I think you should become the next police commissioner or minister. Seriously. No, but seriously, the thing is, you know, if you look out throughout the South African civil service, unfortunately, people that you've just described now are there. People who've been placed there sometimes in the name of transformation. We need a black person, we need a woman, and somebody who's the uncle of so-and-so, or the daughter or the niece of so-and-so, the daughter of a friend, comrade so-and-so, hey, my daughter's CV or my son's CV, get them something. Many people get into the system like that, and many South Africans who study, who go through these things, who should get these positions and these promotions, they don't get them because they're not aligned to the right people in the system. And that is so wrong. It's pervasive.
It's so true, Soli. You know what? The police needs transformation. In that entire police should be transformed. If I have to take that position, the first thing that I have to do is apply the retention policy.
Yeah.
The retention policy is to bring the skilled police officers back to come and assist to get the police to the back of back to basics, to train the ones who, because currently now we are sitting with police officers who doesn't know their functions. People are going to police stations to open cases, and then that police officer at the counter will tell you to write your own statement. That's why cases are not being prosecuted at court, because the first thing a defense lawyer is going to look at is the gaps in a statement. I would apply the retention policy because that's what we need. Those skilled police officers, they left with the skills, left with the experience that we will never get back. It's not there anymore.
Are they accessible? I mean, do you know many of these police officers who left out of frustration, but who still have the skills and the desire to serve, but they're not being used because other people are being put there, people who are not competent, who lack all this basic knowledge that you've just outlined to me. Are they sitting there? Is there a database of them? Are you able to go back to them? Would you be able to say, okay, so-and-so, listen to it, we need to do that, we need to come and serve here? And are they ready to serve? I mean, maybe some of them are way retirement age, but some of them are still young enough to serve if given the opportunity.
They are definitely accessible, and I know a lot of them. I know a lot of police officers who just resign from the police out of pure frustration, who can still make a difference, who can still serve. Even the ones who are beyond retirement age, I mean, you can for 2-3 years, you can still use their skills because they are still, they still live. The thing is, they are the ones with the skills. No one else. For the past 5 years, the police lost a lot of skills, and the ones that are now there are currently no skills anymore. So without skills, we don't have a South African Police Service. Unfortunately, not.
We but don't you need have the skills
because the ones who are sitting in. Pardon?
Yeah, go ahead.
The ones who are sitting in the current top positions doesn't know anything. They don't know anything. And I can say you, tell you now, Soli, not one of them, top position or not top position, can come and challenge me. You know what, when I, the years that I went through the police service, I studied the South African Police Service Act. I sponged. I made sure that when I come across someone who have knowledge, I sponge from that person. I get knowledge from myself. So I've been working across the visible police service, and I have a lot of knowledge. But
if I
left fire, I was dismissed from the firearm department, and currently there's no person who can do my job. Currently, there's no one. And I can tell you with confidence, they are submitting wrong statistics every single month
I believe
to Parliament. Because I was the only one who could retrieve that.
But why are they doing that? To look good? Why would the police say, oh, no, they will only say 10 rapes that took place when they're actually 25 rapes? Is it for them to look good? Why not just tell the truth and then say, okay, this is what we're doing. These are the measures that we're putting in place to reduce this number. Instead of saying beautiful numbers just for PR appeal.
Because there is no oversight. The committees who are supposed to hold the police responsible are taking everything that the police feed them for gospel. They are actually, I can even say that, how can you even have a committee who doesn't even have knowledge of the South African Police Service?
Yeah,
how
are they going? It's like giving me, if you say, Solomon, yes, a helicopter, go and fly it. I've never flown a helicopter, I'm going to crash it.
So how will they commit? But to know that the information that they get from the police is actually the correct information. So the oversight, they know, going to the committee and just feeding them some statistics, they are going to get away with, because the committee is so clueless.
They don't know what questions to ask, right?
They don't even know what questions to ask. They don't know what information to look for. Yeah. I would suggest there must be a committee of former police officers who knows exactly what is happening in the police, but now you just have a political committee who doesn't know what is
happening. Tell me, in the South African Police Service, is fitness, physical fitness important? Sometimes you look at these cops, this one can't run even 1 kilometer. What's going on? I mean, is it, or is it like, no, just give people jobs? Some people are like really, really unfit looking. What's the story there?
You know what? Previously, the police had to be fit. You would not have made, if you look at a previous police officer, you would never have seen a police officer overweight or whatever. But now, with a situation of buying post in the police, that's what you get. That's what you get. I'm sitting with a situation of almost 3,000 applicants who applied, who passed all the assessments, but their names have been removed from the list. And the ones who paid have been put on the list. They say the police are, and my problem with this is the police say they are investigating. How can the police investigate the police? And I'm coming back to that question. How can the police investigate the police? I'm not even going to touch the investigation of IPED, because IPED cannot also investigate, because they are going to found to get to the conclusion that they are going to be instructed to. So what I've been saying all along, Soli, is independent investigators that are not politically aligned, that are not aligned to anyone, those people must be a body established like an ombudsman to investigate.
I totally agree with you. And policemen can't march also. Why? Can't do they not? I mean, dude, you know, you must Google, if you have time, Chrysalis Academy. It's based in Tokai, Cape Town. See how those kids march. Policemen, you say, left the time, they kill each other. It's embarrassing. It's so embarrassing. I mean, basic things, you know, South African police basic don't things. Inspire respect and admiration in the public.
I was at a pass out parade, I think it was the year before last, where these students passed out and they collapsed at a parade. The old police officers were standing with them on the parade, and they were standing for that 2 hours. They instructed her to run around with bottles of waters to assist these These students were lying there on the ground. They collapsed. So you ask yourself if they already collapsed at a pass operate, what is this? What is this that we are having here in the South African Police Service?
Tell me, if Becky Cele were to be removed, replaced, or maybe he might be replaced by another comrade who's useless, but let's say this Becky Cele was removed, do you think there's a chance that things would begin to get better, or is the problem a lot bigger than even just this one man?
You know what? The problem is actually a lot bigger than Becky Cele. But I think the first step, my opinion is the first step is to remove Becky Cele. The first step is to remove Becky Cele, then I think there will be some changes, at least. Because Becky Cele doesn't know his functions. He doesn't know.
Do you think he knows Paja? Does he know Paja?
No. He doesn't. Definitely doesn't know Paja. If he doesn't know his functions as a minister, how would he know of Paja? Because he's into the administration of the South African Police Service, there's no dysfunctions. He must know where to draw the line. The National Commissioner is the National Commissioner, and Becky Cele must respect that.
Yeah.
And Becky Cele becomes the
spokesperson. There's too much politics.
Too much politics. That's why I say the police is politicized. Becky Cele decides what goes in the South African Police Service. You will not see other ministers in other portfolios all over the place being in theaters, doing operations, and do whatever.
Some of them do, but let's not go there today. Some of them do. A lot of the troubles we have in South Africa throughout the system is because of the extent of political interference. If you look at state-owned enterprises, they've been damaged because of political interference. So you don't appoint competent people to deliver, to run institutions, or you do, but then you end up with political heads who want to tell them which way to go, people who have no idea how things work.
Exactly. That's what I say, and the first step is to depoliticize the police. The police is not supposed to be aligned to politics. Being aligned to politics, you sit with people who are serving politicians.
Do you think, for instance, currently with this politicization, say the NPA were to say, look, there's some evidence against, say, Jacob Zuma, we need to go after him. Do you think Becky Cele would say, nope, you can't, that one doesn't go?
Yes, definitely. Definitely, because it's politics. It's not even about a crime committed, because I feel that our democracy is only meant for the politicians and the elite. The taxpayers are not being served. The taxpayers doesn't know this democracy, because if you find a politician being found guilty of a very serious crime and the court says they must pay a fine, then you find someone who are ordinary citizens who are going to get for a lesser crime are going to get a 10-year imprisonment. So yes, it's just simply our people, our country has been sold out. Democracy, we don't know democracy. We hear about democracy. It only applies to the politicians and the elite.
What would you like to see come out for yourself out of what's going on around you? What do you hope for?
What I'm hoping for, Soli, is that my allegations, I have evidence in my allegations. Mm-hmm. I want all those implicated in my allegations to be charged. They must be criminally charged. And you know what? I also want to be vindicated. I want justice for myself. I want justice for my family. I want justice for my 11-year-old son, who must now grow up without a mother. And someone, I don't know, the president is not saying anything. So if the president is not saying anything, which means I must seek assistance from other people from outside the country. But what I'm saying is justice must be served in this instance. We can't live in a country where I, as a whistleblower, must be in hiding while the people I implicated are still in the position of power, still misusing the state resources to come after me, to prosecute me. So I and those people, they must pay for whatever they did against me, not only against me, against the other whistleblowers, who doesn't have a voice today, who were killed. I want to be the voice of those whistleblowers. There are a lot of whistleblowers who are in hiding currently. I want, even want the whistleblower protection. There must be a special body that must be established just for whistleblowers, so that whistleblowers can be get the protection that they deserve. And I believe that more whistleblowers will then come forward, and we will see more corruption, and we will see more prosecution. There must also be a specialized court for corruption reported by whistleblowers. But and that court must be headed by former judges, independent judges. That's what I want to see, Aubrey, because we need our country back. Our country is lost. We need our country back for the sake of the future of our children.
You speak to my heart, I can tell you that. You really do. Tell me, policemen who are caught up in, maybe some of them are either defending corrupt, maybe gangsters or gang leaders, the underground, do they usually do it just for greed because they're getting money, some money out of it? Or is there also a level of blackmail? Do some of them do stuff because they've been threatened, they've been blackmailed? If they don't do that stuff, they end up elsewhere, their families get threatened? Or is it a combination of all of this?
I could almost say it's a combination of all those. You know what once, what happens, Oli? Once you are being, let's say the first time someone offer you a cold drink, that means you are already captured. You are already captured, and after that cold drink, you cannot pull out. So I believe it's a combination of both, because once you accepted the power of corruption into your life, you're already lost.
So in the end, it's not really just knowing about the rule. I mean, you can read the PAJA and memorize it and other required regulations. But if you are unethical yourself, because a lot of times we think when people are competent, they're educated, they will not be corrupt. But if you think about it, a lot of the people who've messed up South Africa, who've taken our South Africa away from what we hoped it would become, are people with amazing, impressive academic qualifications.
Yeah, it also starts with yourself, your morals, your being ethical. Because like you said, if you're unethical, it doesn't matter how educated you are. And you found these people, most of them here in Free State, they are pastors. They are standing in front of congregations on Sunday mornings. But their morals, their ethics are so questionable. You know what is they're so disgraceful, it's disgusting that you find people who are praying the word of God to other people, but behind the scenes they are just the devil themselves. The way I hate corruption, corruption from 2009, corruption almost destroyed my family. Corruption now is destroying my family. All my children knows that their parents have been fighting against corruption since they were very young, and they are now adults. And I'm sitting now with 11-year-old who see that, but my mother are preaching this every day. We must not do this and this and this. But the police, because children believe that the police are good, but now the police is hunting my mother who are doing the right thing. And you know what, you must keep on assuring your children to say, you know what, it's not every one of them, and I want you to keep on doing the right thing, because two wrongs doesn't make a right. And that is the message that I want to put through to everyone, to say keep on doing the right thing, regardless of the consequences, because doing the right thing comes with consequences. It's not easy. So yes, that's my message to them.
Here's my last question to you. Suppose you got an authentic letter from the government, from say the presidency or something, to say, okay, we're going to, Patricia, we would like to give you an audience of 1 hour. You choose. You're going to meet either Ramaphosa for 1 hour or Bekele for 1 hour, not both. Whom would you choose and what would you say to them?
I would like to have an audience with the president.
Okay.
I would like to have an audience with the president to tell the president that he is a public servant. He is also serving under the Public Service Act. Mm-hmm. And although he was elected by a political party, he was elected to serve the entire South Africa. And that's exactly, he must retract these words that he said that his party will come before the country. And he must start serving the country. And he must take his party and put them aside and start serving the, because his party is not paying him. The South African taxpayers are paying him.
I love you. You know, I hope you stay safe, Patricia. I really do. And I hope that you stay and wait, be to keep, you're not alone. And I'm glad that you mentioned 3,000 people also supporting it. There will be even more people, I'm sure, after the, all the, and if you're doing the right thing by putting this thing out there, by making the world know, because everything that you say is not restricted to the people based in South Africa. The world must know what's going on in South Africa. The thing is, the sad thing about all of this is that everything you told me, it's happening within the police service, but it's also happening in other departments. So it's just an accumulation of the extent of the road in the South Africa that we signed up for in 1994 doesn't exist anymore. It's been taken astray. And there's only one set of people who can take it back, the people of South Africa. And people like yourselves have a role to play. And nobody, sometimes gold has to go through fire before it shows its luster. And the pain that we have to go through, the personal sacrifices, hopefully make us realize that we are here for a bigger cause, for the world, for our people, for our children, for the future, because all of this is combined. So it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and I really would like us to talk again in the future. Let's stay connected. I'm looking forward to getting people to see this message and to sharing it, but not only that, to seeing some kind of action. Look, we don't give up hope. Giving up hope should never be an option, right? We must keep hoping that South Africa will be saved by us, the people of South Africa. We must put the kind of pressure that is required on the politicians to, as you say, put country ahead of party. Right now, it's not the case. Thank you very
much. Thank you so much, Soli, for
having me.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard it for yourself. Soli Moeng here again. In a recent conversation with Patricia, it's been an amazing conversation about what is going on in the South African Police Service. But I'd like to thank you for staying with us. For those of you who are still here with us, it means you've enjoyed this discussion. Thank you very much for staying with us. Patricia Mashale has been an amazing interlocutor, and she's given us so much information, but hopefully not just for entertainment purposes, but for people to wake up, open their eyes, start connecting the dots for South Africa. Please continue sharing these conversations to get more people aware of them. Subscribe to Worldview if you want, and share it with your friends. Those of you who have the means to financially support Worldview, please write to us at info@world-view.co. info@worldview.co. This is Soli Moeng at Worldview. Bye-bye.